This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is iFanboy Special Edition, Legion of Superheroes. Hello, welcome to iFanboy Special Edition, Legion of Superheroes. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and the Animated Brain Trust has reconvened. We've got Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And Dr. Reinhaupt.
It's me, Stretch Too Thin Boy.
And we are here to discuss the latest DC Universe animated original film, Legion of Superheroes. Latest, it came out, well, it depends on how you get it. If it came out on disc a couple weeks ago, about 4 weeks ago, and it came out to rent digitally last week. So we are here now to review it. Paul, what are the stats on this film?
All right, so this is the eighth in the Tomorrowverse line of movies, but it is the 281st, can you believe, of the DC animated feature-length films.
There's been a lot of them.
There's been many, yes.
Many films. So there'll be spoilers if you haven't watched it yet.
And we've reviewed all of them.
We've reviewed all of them, every single one.
I missed one. I missed one episode, but actually, which was the first of these. I missed the Superman Tomorrow.
The Superman one we did... It was like me and Josh and Ron and Gordon, the intern, because we didn't really know what it was. And it was, you know.
No. The first Tomorrowverse.
Oh, the first Tomorrowverse. I thought you were talking about all these films. Yes.
No, the first Tomorrowverse one was just me and you, Connor.
That's right. Yeah. The Superman one. That was a good one.
It was a good one.
Anyway, this was directed by Jeff Wamster, who has done three of these films. He did Green Lantern, Boom, My Power last year, and he did Justice Society, World War II the year before. Written by Josie Campbell, who is a TV and comedy writer who also wrote the new champion of Shazam comic book series this past year. I forgot what that book was called. So she's been in the DC world a little bit, and it stars the regular voices from the Tomorrowverse in some small roles. Jensen Ackles as Batman and Matt Bomer as The Flash and Darren Criss as Superman, as well as a bunch of newcomers for the new roles here. As the film opens, the title of it is Legion of Superheroes, but there's a giant S-shield over it, and I laughed because it's not a Supergirl film, even though she's the star of it. It's called Legion of Superheroes, but they don't get their own logo. They have to have Supergirl's logo.
It seems odd that it's just... Well, we'll talk about it. I mean,
let's talk about it, because it is interesting. Legion of Superheroes, basically hardly any kind of name recognition amongst the wider general public. There was a Legion of Superheroes cartoon briefly, but...
Right.
It's strange they didn't call it Supergirl and the Legion of Superheroes or something like that. Which is, wasn't that a cartoon show also?
There was Superboy in the Legion of Superheroes.
I just found it funny that on the title of the film on the screen, it said Legion of Superheroes, and then the S-Shield appeared, and I was like, well, that's not their logo.
Right. And the part of this felt to me, maybe until it got a little bit more ambitious as it went going, but it felt, I was like, this feels like a pilot. Mm. It feels like the start of either a series of movies or like this would be like the hour-long premiere to an animated series.
Yeah, I think I picked up on that in a different way, Paul, because I felt like the thing that I was maybe the most impressed by in this movie was the level of restraint in like building out this Tomorrowverse universe, because it felt like they're actually doing it, you know, slowly and with purpose, not just throwing everything at the wall.
Right.
And I think that kind of speaks to the same observation you made. I think yours is probably better put. But and it's a shame about the Legion of Superheroes because they have a great logo.
Yeah. So the film opens with Kara on Krypton with her mom, and they're you know, having mother-daughter time right as basically the day of Krypton's destruction. It's basically a mini Kara / Superman origin in the pre-credit sequence where she gets shipped off in a ship to Earth. Of course, we know they don't really say it in the film, but we know that her shuttle gets damaged. We see it get damaged, but that means it takes longer to get to Earth. And of course, her cousin Superman.
Yeah, the actual traversal from the Krypton neck of the woods to Earth is the title sequence.
Right. And so that her cousin's ship laps her in space, and he gets there before her and grows up before she even gets there. So then we have the little Legion of Superheroes / Supergirls logo title, and then present day where Supergirl is helping fight Solomon Grundy in Metropolis.
This threw me off because she's dressed like she thinks Earth people would dress
right.
to go to school. But like the way it's designed, I was like, did she land in the future? Like, well, I was like, where,
yeah,
where
it's very
and when
Metropolis
are we?
City of Tomorrow style. Like it looks more futuristic. And I think that is consistent with the way that it's portrayed in the Superman standalone movie that began the Tomorrowverse line.
True. It's just, it's a jump from where she was. And she, it's not like, we don't see her land. We don't see her meet Cal. We don't see any of that. She's starting off her life in Metropolis, and she's got a sideways baseball cap, and but like the, it looks, I was like, are we in like Batman Beyond? Like, are we like
well, yeah, even the way the other citizens of Metropolis are dressed is
we had a weird shirt on, like
it was a weird shirt on.
Like the collarless, like so, yeah.
My question watching it was, how long has she been there? Because the whole joke is that she destroys a building or she damages a building in the course of fighting Solomon Grundy, and the guy who owns the building is all mad at her. And she's like, well, just have your robots fix it. And I was like, did she just land? Like, how long has she been on Earth? All she's got to do is be there for a couple of days before she realizes there are no robot servants.
Like, unless she's been in the Fortress of Solitude where there are robot servants.
Does he not have TV? Like,
yeah,
he must have told her about life on...
Never seen a TV in the Fortress of Solitude.
I mean, they know, people know her. Like, people weren't like, who the hell are you? They knew she was Supergirl, so she must have been there long enough.
Although I do like the conceit, at least, that she's used to living in this very advanced society.
Yes.
And then sometimes that gets put under the rug or just forgotten, or it's not emphasized in other Supergirl origin stories,
right,
where it's not just that she's a fish out of water. She's also like a fish out of time almost. So it's
she's like the Dowager. She doesn't know how to do anything for herself. And so Superman and Batman decide that the best thing for her to do is to go to the future and train with the Legion of Superheroes in a world that is
more
technologically advanced.
I think Batman was suggesting that they kill her. I think he's she's dangerous and she shouldn't be here. Like, I don't know if you would just wanted to, can't you send her to your Phantom Zone or something? And but Superman's like, hey, what if I've got this baseball from my time with the Legion of Superheroes that I can throw up into the air and it opens a portal. That was kind of a cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was a cool effect.
And I like that he had to throw it.
Yes.
It couldn't just open the portal. It was he had to toss it into the sky. That was fun. Mm-hmm.
It's something you feel the giant key that only he can use to get into the Fortress of Solitude.
Right.
Well, and it looked cool the way that it activated too.
Right.
It was a cool visual, sort of reminiscent of, there's just Josh's favorite storytelling device where Kara gets, out of sync in time with her cousin, her baby cousin Cal. And the way he throws the ball and it opens up into a portal is also reminiscent of that interstellar thing where a wormhole would actually be a sphere in space, not a circle in space. Mm-hmm. So you throwing a ball kind of, I don't know. It worked. I thought it was cool.
Yep.
I mean, so then she goes to the future. She is brought into the Legion Academy, basically, with all the new Legionnaires training. She meets super cute Mon-El.
who immediately is like, I love Krypton. I love their whole conformity thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. File that away.
Picking up on some fashy vibes from Lana right away. Like, I didn't catch that. I didn't either.
It was very weird because he's very cheerful about it. I love Krypton's whole vibe, the conformity and the. I was like.
So she goes there and then there's a whole situation. So, I mean, on the whole, I liked this. It wasn't great. It wasn't like, wow, that was amazing. But it also wasn't bad. Like, I enjoyed watching it. I had fun. Parts of it have already left my brain I only watched it 24 hours ago. So it's not like going to stick around. It's like, well, that was really great. But I also, like, I had a good time watching. I never like drifted away attention wise. I thought some of the things were fun. They did.
I continue to enjoy the visual style of the Tomorrowverse.
Yes.
Yes.
It's very clean. I like the thick, heavy lines. I think I liked how to say this, how dowdy Solomon Grundy looked.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't jacked, that's for sure.
He wasn't jacked, no. He looked a bit, he was lumpy, but he did look dangerous. And I was like, oh my God, they gave Solomon Grundy a gun. Right. That's a neat idea. In terms of, I think if this were a pilot and they hadn't gone all the way with the Brainiac stuff, like Brainiac Prime, not Brainy, but right. Like, I feel like there was potential there to like do continuing stories. The thing that's frustrating is this is one of the worst depictions of Brainiac I can think of, and we've seen a lot of them.
What do you mean worst?
I think.
And which Brainiac are you talking about? There were like four of them.
The original Brainiac.
Okay.
The big bad of this movie. Brainiac. Spoiler alert. Yeah. Brainiac. When you build yourself or have your minions build mm-hmm. you a body of your old clones, you're basically cannibalizing your old clones to make your new Frankenstein body, don't have their faces functional so they're able to think and speak independently and argue with you.
I kind of liked it because it was so weird and creepy, which is so unusual to these films.
But for someone other than Brainiac, Brainiac is supposed to be smart. I like that it's something different and refreshing, but that seems like a really dumb move for Brainiac.
Sure.
I mean, this movie, when it goes hard, it goes hard. Like, Brainiac and his former clones ripped himself apart. People get murked in this movie.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's brutal.
There's a brutal death of who I thought was Dream, what's her name? But it was Duplicate Girl. I thought it was Dawnstar.
Duplicate Girl.
Oh, yeah, she ends up being Duplicate Girl, but it was pretty brutal body shot of her, like half charred body. And I was like, oh.
Yep.
There were parts glowing still of her from the embers.
People get shot and in the beginning when they break into Star Labs mm-hmm. and they all have the red Krypton guns, mm-hmm. Red Kryptonite guns. When they shoot people, they like burn alive. They
didn't even let that guy finish his donut.
Yeah.
The Supergirl got shanked with a Kryptonite knife. Like, it was pretty surprisingly brutal film.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was pretty lighthearted for the most part, you know, until the violence.
Yeah, it's kind of a teen romp for most of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's kind of what I liked about it. It kept going unexpected directions. I mean, on the whole, I thought it was fun. I always like seeing the Legion, even though I'm not a huge Legion fan. I always like the idea of the Legion.
Like the idea of them, but in
execution. There's always a million of them, and that was the shot at the end where they all show up, and I was like, wow, there's a lot of people here.
Yep. Yes.
So we really only focus on the new kids in town, which is like Bouncing Boy, Fall Off, Lad.
Right.
Invisible Kid, Triplicate Girl, Dawnstar, Shadow Lass, Arms Fall Off Boy, sorry. And those are the ones that she's sort of living with, and also Mon-El. It was funny because when I was like loading the disc into the player, I was like, why did they make this movie? And then I realized, oh, you know, the cover is Supergirl, Mon-El, and Brainiac, and those were like the three main characters on the Supergirl TV show.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense. That's why they did it. So this film is a lesson for anyone watching it. It's that you never trust the charming jock
who's adopted your family's last name for himself.
You always trust the awkward, weirdo outcast because he's really got a heart of gold. And so that's what happens in this movie. We find that Mon-El is the bad guy, which I was pretty surprised they made such a major character change in a movie like this in a shared universe film.
I've never seen him depicted as anything other than heroic, if not flawed, but heroic.
Right. And then it mm-hmm. turns out that Brainiac 5, who she was suspicious of because of obviously the Brainiac connection, turns out to be a hero and her love interest and her new boyfriend at the end.
They never mention the Daxamites, which is Mon-El's race, are, you know, he mentions like not liking Kryptonite, but Kryptonite doesn't actually affect Daxamites. Daxamites are affected by lead. Lead is their Kryptonite, which is why when Clark originally shows Mon-El his shard of kryptonite, he reacts the same, but he's reacting to the box the kryptonite's being kept in, not the kryptonite itself. Right. They never bring that up in this movie.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, there's a lot going on.
Sorry, just my deep cut Daxamite lore.
No, that is interesting. And I think Brainy continually reminded me of like a Spock, particularly how they've been depicting young Spock in various things like the Kelvinverse and then also in Strange New World. It's a fun dynamic for an ongoing story to tell more stuff, to maybe develop that stuff over time. Kind of cool. But as a standalone thing, I wish... Like, if it were an ongoing, I wish we could see more of the future because we're just at this isolated school.
Right.
Like, we don't get to see how the rest of the world is going.
We're just at Brainy's school for gifted youngsters.
Right, right. Interesting uses of all the powers. I thought the whole thing with Brainy creating the, what are we calling it, the kinetic or the armor that, you know, the more times you hit it, the more, you know... Stronger it gets, the more dense it gets. And then she's able to, you know, kind of go under him or like make it weigh so much that she can just tip him over under his little dome of stuff. That looked cool.
Yeah, there were fun things. I really liked Arms Fall Off Lad's, you know, use of his power at the end when he throws his arm, grabs a thing, comes back. It was almost like a whip or like Inspector Gadget. You know, it was like he could toss his arms. The arm could act independently. It could come back to him. It was a way of grabbing things and. That was cool. I never seen that before.
That's the fun thing with characters. Like when you have mutants that are like weird mutants or you have weird Legion of Superhero characters where you have off-kilter powers that don't have to sustain a monthly title.
Right.
You can do like really weird specific things and get smart with like how they combo their powers together. And so that's always fun.
No appearance of Matter Eater Lad, though.
So. No, no.
Well, he's a full-fledged member.
That was the one part I admit that, you know, I had a little bit of a hard time keeping track just because I don't feel like the actual Legion members weren't animated to be that much more adult looking than trainee members. So it was a little hard to keep track of like, wait a second, who's like a trainee at the academy and who's like an adult or who's a full fledged Legion member? They didn't have rings.
Yeah, I think what Paul said is accurate. It's like they didn't do a great job of establishing the world. Even inside the training facility, it was like, you know, who was that again? And what was their like? And who are they? And who's the commission of Legionnaires that aren't trainees but look like you're right. They all look the same age. So
speaking of that, confusing. Big youth pastor vibes from Timberwolf.
You mean the Wolverine of the Legion?
I think he would like to be called that. I think he has always liked to be called that.
I don't think you grow your facial hair out like that unless you're trying to get someone to call you.
Yeah, that's Logan. It's certainly a look.
Paul, you nailed it. I didn't think about it, but when you said it, it immediately made sense. It felt very much like a pilot. Like there was a lot more they had to do here because it wasn't super well balanced. You know, for a film called The Legion of Superheroes, it was a Supergirl movie and it was hardly about the Legion at all.
Or like, was it originally intended to be and then they turned it into just a standalone movie? You're always curious, like, what was the brief on this, you know?
Right.
And so...
It feels to me like the brief was, this is a Supergirl in the Legion movies, which ties into the characters and the themes that they did in the live-action show.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time it was done and came out, the live-action show is long gone. And for some reason, whatever reason, they took Supergirl's name off it. That's what it felt like just from watching it. Because if it was a Supergirl movie, she opens the movie, she's the main character, she's in most of the scenes. You know, the Legion is sort of her background material. Which is unfortunate, it just wasn't Supergirl.
Yeah, my thing was, so Superman is the responsible one. He's going to leave her here in the future. And I was like, is there no talk of like communication between the two?
Did you see the post-credits sequence?
Yes, I did. So okay. that was crucial.
Yeah.
And I almost didn't. I almost like stopped it during the credits because
it's not a mid-credits. It is a fully post-credit sequence.
Yeah, that's what they do on this. But that's totally also not totally unusual. In the comics and other places, he's sort of just sent her away to the future.
Yeah.
Even his son went and lived in the future with no way of communicating them, you know, Jonathan.
I think maybe my favorite and like I think the most successful comedic part of the movie is when she's initially not so sure about joining this academy. And then after she meets Mon-El, she's like,
goodbye.
Way into it. She's like, bye, see you. And like just the, I don't know, the expression on her face, it really plays the comic timing.
Meg
Donnelly,
who was the voice of Supergirl, did a really good job.
She did. I like her portrayal a lot.
Mm-hmm.
She had great range of emotion. She was funny. Harry Shum Jr. was Brainiac 5 in a role that very much felt like they were trying to ape what Jesse Rath did on Supergirl, who was a really good and had a really unique and interesting take on the character. And they felt like they were trying to sort of do that kind of thing with him. Yuri Lowenthal was Mon-El, and he was good. But there wasn't a lot to play with, I think, otherwise, with the other characters. I think they were all fun. I mean, again, I liked it. It's just, at the end of the day, it was like, maybe my feeling of it being certainly unsettled, Paul, is from what you said, is that it felt more like a pilot than a complete movie.
Ryan, tell us what happens in that post-credit sequence that you could totally miss, but like, yeah. Maybe you should definitely watch that part.
It's basically Cal and Kara FaceTiming through through a time portal.
Yeah.
And she's updating him on her adventures. And then she introduces him to Brainiac 5 as her boyfriend, which was, I thought, a cute sequence where Brainy's super nervous and she's very assured of herself in her relationship in front of Cal, which was cute. But then they, Cal hangs up, says, I gotta go back to being Superman. And he and Batman are standing in front of a giant smoking crater in the middle of, I think it's Metropolis. I'm not sure.
I guess so.
But then they either get boom tubed or Zeta beamed away.
Well, there's a giant smoking hole in the ground, much like the one that they're standing in front of. So it doesn't feel like it's a Zeta beam, but who knows?
Well, but then, yeah. So like, there's a beam that comes from the sky and it leaves a smaller smoking hole that has taken.
Well, Superman runs to block the beam from hitting Batman.
Right.
And to protect him. And then they both disappear. And when I knew we were, recording today, I was starting to think about the movie again and what we're going to talk about. And I was like, oh, what was in that post-credit sequence? I don't remember it. Oh, right. Batman Superman died.
Right. Like visually they get vaporized.
Yeah,
like that, so you're like, huh, and then like that's it. And so I would maybe put that as like a mid-credit sequence. That feels important.
Which is interesting because clearly they're setting up they talked about that before. There was something was coming, right? They keep saying that something is coming.
Right.
I mean, you don't think it was either a boom tube or a Zeta beam?
I don't know what it was. I had both of those thoughts. But Zeta beams don't usually leave a smoking crater in the back.
Neither
do boom tubes, really. It's more of, oh, I see. Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm looking ahead. So,
right.
The next Tomorrowverse film is Justice League War World. It's got to be whatever that is. They just got zapped to War World.
So you're saying it's some kind of beam we've never even heard of before.
Yeah, maybe some kind of War World beam that we've never even heard of before.
it's a new kind of beam.
So they got zapped to War World. That's what it was.
So this is, and plug your ears or fast forward if you don't want it, but like Mongol is listed for this if you didn't pick that up from the title. So I don't know, seems like too soon to be directly related to
the Action Comics
recent
run.
Yeah, which is, I've enjoyed that.
There have been several War World stories. Not
sure,
just
yeah. I just, but like, and usually when they adapt things, they do like a pretty significant twist. I feel like
Batman with him is a pretty significant twist.
Right.
Or in the whole Justice League.
Also, yeah, Wonder Woman, Martian Manhunter, John Stewart, Green Lantern, The Flash are all listed for this. So the gang's all here. So I guess those other heroes, maybe that'll be the beginning of that, is they will get caught up in.
I guess they're not all dead then. I thought they killed Superman and Batman. Thought it was a nice twist. At the end of the day, I don't know if there's a ton to talk about with this. It was more like, it was fun. It was cute. I don't want to say cute to be derogatory. Like the romance was fun and cute.
Yeah, it's just like, it's got that, Riverdale kind of
teen
vibe to it.
It had romance comedy vibes. They start off as enemies. They become in love with each other and someone tries to kill them. And they overcome that. And it's the jock in the school. Mm-hmm. Never trust the jocks.
Never.
Is what the message of this film is.
Look at who's telling the story.
So
who benefits? Que bono.
I as a Supergirl film, I thought it was fun. I kind of wish it was more of a Legion film. Like if you're gonna do the Legion, do the Legion. Maybe
you
there may be
just do Legion sans any super person.
I don't know that the Legion has like a stacked roster of villains. I feel like they're usually up against the Science Police and butting heads with the United Planets.
Right.
It's Dark Side.
It was more like Supergirl with Brainiac and Mon-El plus a few in the background. And then the rest of the team shows up in the final scene and you don't even talk. Well, one of them talks, or two of them talk. So it was not really a Legion of Superheroes movie.
No, I mean, they reference, you know, there's a hologram of Saturn Girl, and Superman talks openly about having, you know, a friendly relationship with her. But, like, we never see Saturn Girl. I think we see maybe a couple of the other founders.
We see them at the end. They show up.
And they immediately hire them. Like, it's like, I forget if it was like Cosmic Boy or it's one of the.
It's Cosmic Boy.
The upper ranked.
And Lightning Lad.
Lightning Lad.
Yeah. They're like, we just landed here, but all of you are officially hired to Legion of Superheroes.
I think there's a Gold Lantern in there. That's interesting.
I'm gonna say I would like to be debriefed on what happened first.
Yeah, I mean, clearly Ryan is the team from the Legion of Superheroes book that just came out with the Brian Bendis one. The Gold Lantern.
The Starman who has the mental issues.
Yeah.
Looks like they might even have a... oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the Kirby. Who's the Kirby? OMAC. Looks like they've even got an OMAC on the team.
Gotta have an OMAC.
You have the benefit of looking at it right now.
I am looking at it right now. That's true.
So yeah, I mean, I think this is fun. If you've been watching these movies and you like, you know, it's a fun time for 83 minutes.
But you're right in that it's fairly forgettable.
Somewhat, yeah. Like, I totally forgot about I literally was like, oh no, I hope one of them remembers what happens in the post-credit sequence. And then later on, I remembered it.
I would say you could safely wait and watch this when it comes to HBO Max, but I don't think it's safe to assume that anything is going to come to HBO Max or is going to stay there.
Right.
They seem to be farming all of their content out to other places so they can make money that way.
For tax purposes, this will be streaming on Tubi only.
Right.
Question. You mentioned this earlier, Paul, the art style. I do love this art style with the heavy black lines. But they didn't do it for her hair. Her hair had no heavy black lines.
It gave it texture.
It was mostly okay. There's a couple of times where it was like whipping around and black lines would appear and disappear. And I was like, this is an odd thing.
I will say that her hair bothered me far less than her mother's hair, which was like a brain.
It was like a weird, yeah. It was like
a brain sack.
Right. Instead of it wasn't a bun, but I guess it was sort of like a beehive bun type thing.
But from an advanced society in outer space. So it looked like, you know, like a parasite of some sort. But also, you talk about the Mon-El thing and the conformity and everything, the fascism.
Yeah.
I'm worried about where Kara would have ended up because she was on just like hardcore military track in the beginning before they were.
Yeah, she was doing the Soldiers Guild or whatever it was.
Wasn't she? There was a whole thing. I'm trying to remember New Krypton. I feel like she was going, but bouncing between different guilds and stuff.
In the comics? Or
When
there was another planet on the other side of the sun from Earth where Zod had set up a Kryptonian society? Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, and I just mean, and I don't mean just like because she was in the military in general, but I'm saying ultimately you're going to be under Zod and then is she going to be
Well, I think they've often positioned her as sort of slightly more tough and rough, not tough, but rougher than Superman.
Well, in terms of, you know, in the year of 2023, we're all collecting our traumas, and her trauma is clearly of losing the planet is much more distinct and acute than anything Clark remembers from being a little baby.
Right. I even mentioned that briefly here, as far as she's, you know, she hasn't dealt with the fact that everyone she knew is gone and everything. But also, if you look at the most recent comics, the costume redesigns, she's wearing a pretty severe tunic situation. So maybe that's deep down, she's a Zodist.
Also, I mean, her mom, I guess, designed those skate pods for maximum trauma. Like, they're facing backwards and
not enough room so that if you get jolted around, you don't crack your head, get a Kryptonian concussion and get knocked out.
And also just designed to have the moment of, you know, touching your hand to the glass. So, you know, the other person and you watch the planet explode as you
Well, that's what I was also wondering because, you know, the whole thing, you know, is Argo City. Argo City was saved from the explosion. Some of her family made it back. So that's a whole other level of what she deals with. And I kept sort of waiting for the city to be extricated from Krypton, but not in this world.
I was waiting for a beam to land on her mom as she was zooming backwards away from her. It was just the ultimate but yeah, she does hit her head and she's out.
Do we know where on Krypton Zod is from? I don't think we have.
Cleveland.
Cleveland. Oh, that makes sense.
I'm sure they've explored it somewhere, but yeah.
Is there anything more to talk about? I don't know. I think it was fine. It was fine.
Yeah.
I guess, do we think we'll ever see this version of Supergirl again in the Tomorrowverse?
Yeah, possibly.
In the Tomorrowverse.
Everyone's sort of showing up again some way. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, never.
That's a good question. I don't know. I would like to. I always like Supergirl. She's fun.
Yeah, especially if, you know, she appears in any other kind of, you know, live. I mean, we know she's in the Flash movie, but beyond, you know, whatever Tim Gunn has planned. She's, well, there's going to be a Supergirl movie.
Whatever Tim Gunn has planned when he tells DC Tim to Gunn make it work?
He has straight lines and clean design plan. James Gunn, there's a Supergirl movie in his initial slate, so there's a good chance we'll see her in another animated film.
I'm curious whether the Supergirl from, or it's not Superwoman, it's Supergirl in the Flash movie. I guess we'll have to wait and see if she's going to be the Supergirl in the Supergirl standalone movie, or if that's a different.
Yeah.
My guess is that's all gets wiped away.
That seems likely to me.
Okay, yeah.
I wouldn't get too attached to anything. That's why it's going to be weird to talk about. Like,
well, didn't they also, I mean, yeah, haven't they been, hasn't it been kind of an open secret that they've completely reshot the ending to that movie? So
that's the rumor, that they've reshot the ending. Yeah, my guess is all that stuff is gone. She's the Supergirl of the Snyderverse, which, you know,
I think they're going to put in the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the next one's Batman the Beginning of Gotham. It's based on the Mike Mignola story. And we'll talk about that when it comes out. When we'll review it, it probably won't be until it'll be in April, just because we have to wait till it comes out on digital, although I think, Paul, you're going to buy the disc this time. It's just that we have, this particular time of year, we've got a lot of special edition shows, and we try to put more than one out a week. There's a lot of films coming out, and we have other things. So it's probably not going to be reviewed until April. Beginning of April, though. It'll be early, but it's going to be a while till we get to that one. This is not a good time, guys.
I mean, are you saying you're tired of talking to us?
No, it's just there's a lot to schedule here. They usually spread these out. Why they did this to us, I don't know.
We were not consulted.
No.
We certainly would have recommended that you space them out a little bit more. Just
exactly. When is Warworld going to come out? You know, is going to be in 9 months? They haven't even announced that release time. Oh, so summer, but that's, you know. Does that mean there are going to be four films this year?
Also, in 2023, what is summer? What does that mean? That's summer true. Where?
Summer right now.
I was going to say, you were talking about penguins because it's February. I didn't see winter this year in particular. I don't know what you're talking about, Paul. I don't know where your winter was, but mine never quite showed up.
I saw a couple different seasons this past week.
It was nearly 80 degrees today here in DC.
It's hot.
Roker has a lot to answer for. That's what I can.
All right, so we will be back to discuss Batman, the Doom That Came to Gotham in about a month.
You may have heard that already. We don't know.
Yeah.
We may have already talked about that.
Wait, Paul, are you suggesting that this episode somehow got off course and didn't arrive in their podcast feed until after Doom That Came to Gotham was
exactly
in their feed? Wow, that's trippy, man. It's trippy.
That's true.
It was this podcast's destiny and responsibility to take care of and lead you into the next podcast. But everything changed. Everything went off course.
That's heavy, man.
Across the streams.
We got hit by a rock in space and got...
Yep.
Well, but until then, you can obviously listen to our Pick of the Week show, which me and Josh Flanagan, sometimes Ryan Halper, sometimes special guests, even Paul sometimes, talks about the week's comics. As I said, we're in the midst of tons of special edition shows. We have our Media Splode show, our Talks Splode show, our Books Splode show. We have our Ant-Man review came out that Paul and I did. We have a Shazam review coming out. It's all kinds of stuff happening right now. It's a very, very busy time. I think 8 weeks in a row with special shows.
We're it's an exciting right time. Now. It's a fun, sexy time.
Exciting is one word for it. Scheduling nightmare is another. So we'll be back as the Animated Brain Trust for Batman, the Doom That Came to Gotham in April. Until then, I'm Connor.
I am and always shall be, Paul.
Are we not going to do ratings?
God damn it.
three and a half stars. 3 stars. 3.25 stars.
I know. Watching it, I was like, I'm not super enjoying this, but there's nothing offensive about it either. And I was also wavering in like a 3.5 range. So I think 3.25 is a good sweet spot.
Lock it in. We're agreed. 3.25.
So there you go. There's your ratings. So see you next time. Bye bye.
Stretch too thin, man. Does it again. Who win, my darling? What matters is what